Mrazek out to play this one. Into the near corner. Callahan steals it. Settles it! Score! Cologne! Cologne! 1-0 Lightning with 1:43 left!
That call by Rick Peckham as Alex Killorn scores for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
That was a great call.
They win the series 4-1 over the Detroit Red Wings, and they are the first team to advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs, to the second round, where they will meet the winner of the Panthers-Islanders series.
This is a new trend, eh? Like I know the passion's there. I still prefer the Bob Cole, more of the keeping that, changing the tone a little bit. Like, that was a little bit too intense for me there.
I think it depends largely if you're listening to a national broadcaster or a team's local broadcaster. And I mean, that's the radio call. So I think for the radio call, I mean, I'm not overly surprised about the...
I'm not surprised, but it's not my preference. I'm
sure.
Not.
You're old school that way, though.
I'm old school that way.
Yeah, I thought the trend was bell bottoms.
What?
Silence. Crickets.
Continue, Drew.
Happy Passover to you, boys. Forgot to mention that earlier in the show.
You as well, Drew. You brought some nice chocolate matzah and caramel here that I've eaten about 5 pieces of.
Did you
make this, Drew?
I didn't. Laura made it, but you must be on a pretty good sugar high there, given what you've been snarfling down.
Yeah. I got an hour and a half so far with you guys, so I'm going to eat another 5 pieces.
Yeah, you were away last week. You got a week off from us.
I listened to the show, though. It was a good show.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... My phone died after 5 minutes, but I mean, what I heard was great.
The first 5 minutes was fantastic. Was
Happy Passover to you guys, and shout out to Shelly, who had a Seder last night, and I was invited to. I think I ate enough for basically the next 2 weeks.
You had 3 matzo balls in your soup, not one or two.
They knew. You have to request.
That's a lot
extra
of matzo balls.
I love matzo balls. They knew that, so they gave me 3. Usually you get 1, maybe 2. Yeah. I got 3.
For people who are unfamiliar with matzo balls, it's really like eating sort of drywall. I think it's sort of
a little harsh, Drew.
By the way,
far off from that.
Drew, I have a Tupperware container in my car with 6 gefilte fish if you want one.
He's actually not joking. That's the scariest part.
6? I'm not a gefilte fish fan to begin with, but that's a lot of fish.
I love it.
Okay, well, then you have 6 pieces to
If you want one, just let me know. I mean, I'm going to probably eat those in my car on the way home, but...
Yeah. I'm good on that front.
Not biting, just swallowing.
Yeah. Anyways, but fitting, though, that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
By the way, I saw Les Rikus eating an Illegal Curve Sandwich the other day, and he actually put challah bread in place of the
toasted
rye bread.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So you can customize the Illegal Curve Sandwich to fit your needs. Now let's talk about the Lightning and the Red Wings. The Lightning obviously winning in 5 games, moving on to the second round of the playoffs. This series, to me, I mean, it's 5 games. It doesn't seem like it's that much of a competitive series. To me, the series, the score, the 4-1 sort of flatters the Lightning, as it was a much closer series, I thought, than the score would indicate by that 4-1 margin.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, Drew, and out of the 4 of the 5 games, Detroit was able to outshoot the Lightning. So, I mean, that's a huge thing there, right? I mean, I know it's a simple look at it. Obviously, there's the effects of the score of the game and such, but it wasn't as if it was completely dominant performance by the Lightning. There were parts where they really pushed the pace, but I think the key of the series, I don't want to simplify it too much because there are other reasons, but the key of the series is the Lightning top line wasn't completely dominant. Mm-hmm. Tyler Johnson, which I wasn't sure if he was going to be healthy, was healthy, and not only healthy, but tremendously effective. And Ben Bishop, as he has been all year and really hasn't got enough attention, certainly on the show we haven't talked about it enough, how well Ben Bishop has played, that continued. And if you look at Game 5, his play, the way he was able to shut down a Detroit team that was able to get chance after chance, kind of captured how well he had played all year and allowed the Lightning to advance in a bracket that, you know, they very well may think and probably do that they're the favorite to come out of that bracket and play the winner of what very well may be Washington-Pittsburgh.
Well, you know, to that point about them being the favorite now in their corner of the bracket, did we underestimate, write off the Lightning too soon without Strahlman and Stamkos? Because, you know,
hold on there. Okay. I mean, that's a fair question.
Thank you.
Strahlman, injury is an issue. I mean, I don't think you can understate how the Tyler Johnson hucked into the boards of Montreal. I mean, I wasn't sure if he'd be okay. If he wasn't okay, I don't know how. I don't think they would have won that series with Detroit. I picked Detroit, so I was certainly wrong there. That's fair. they're in a weaker bracket.
Sure.
And they got a pretty good draw.
Detroit was a good matchup for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you could argue both ways there. But had they matched up in the other bracket, I'm not so sure. And obviously, the divisions, it's not going to be the way that it is. But I'm not so sure if you took all eight teams in the Eastern Conference, we underestimated the Lightning. But this, it's kind of like last year. Anaheim plays the Jets, mm-hmm. and Calgary plays Vancouver. That's this bracket this year, in my opinion. I mean, the teams are solid, but they're not
contenders.
Top end.
I definitely agree with you on that one, Richie. I think Detroit was the best matchup for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, they beat them last year in the first round. Detroit really limped into the playoffs. Detroit was very close to missing the playoffs. Mm-hmm. If you remember, you know, Boston, the last couple games of the season there. And you got to give credit, the Tampa Bay defense without Anton Strahlman, who's usually on the top pair with Victor Hedman, has been really good. And Jason Garrison and Andre Schuster were really good in that series. But for me, you know, I agree with you, Rich. The story of this series was how dominant the Kucherov-Johnson-Killorin line was.
Awesome.
After last year, Palat was on that line, but because Stamkos is injured, you know, they had to rejig the lines. And Killorin's a player that I've really liked, a very underrated player, obviously scores the series-winning goal. But to me, another huge storyline in the series is Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk combined for 1 point. Pavel Datsyuk, no points in five games. And, you know, it's possible that this is his last NHL playoff series. But to me, he just wasn't a factor. His line was not a factor in the series. Helm, Datsyuk, and Richards. Richards scored one goal. You know, the Nyquist-Zetterberg-Larkin line wasn't much better. Zetterberg had one goal. Nyquist had one goal. They only scored 7 goals in five games. So you got to give the Tampa Bay Lightning credit, and potentially, Drew, Ben Bishop, who had an excellent regular season, he could be a Vezina finalist. He might not be just because of the there's some other goalies that are going to get some consideration.
Well,
Luongo, Holtby.
I think Holtby wins it.
Yeah.
And the question is who's second and third.
Yeah. But he did have an excellent season, whatever metrics you want to use, goals against, save percentage, whatever. He was really good. His goals against was under 2, save percentage 950. I mean, that's really good. He stole one of the games. The Lightning could not solve Ben Bishop. And you have to think
the Red Wings,
The Red Wings. And you have to think, though, is this kind of a sign that the Red Wings really have to move on from Zetterberg and Datsyuk?
Well, I mean, because do they have a choice? I mean, if he leaves anyways, then they have to move on.
They have to. And you know, you look at this Detroit Red Wings team, and, you know, they've got some good young players. We mentioned Dylan Larkin had an excellent rookie season. Riley Sheahan, I thought, was one of their best forwards. Athanasiou was really good, scored a goal in that series. But you look at this team and you wonder, like, is this team going to make the playoffs next year without Pavel Datsyuk in the lineup? And who's going to replace Pavel Datsyuk?
That's a fair question. Larkin slowed down. Their defense, I don't really like. And what's going to be their goaltending situation? And there are questions that need to be answered in Detroit. And Ken Holland has his work cut out for him. Now, he has some pieces there in Nyquist and Tatar, and SCU, as you mentioned, Ezzy and Larkin. So there are pieces, and he's not starting from the beginning. But at the same time, they have to navigate through some of these issues, and there is going to be a transition time, and it appears Datsyuk is going to be leaving. We didn't mention also, I think it should be noted, how effective Jonathan Drouin was in the middle of the series there, and his offensive prowess and his patience to create some goals for the Lightning and the secondary scoring, which in reality we talked about how effective that top line was, but when they needed a little bit of a kick, they didn't have a ton of secondary scoring here.
No, they had almost next to none.
But when they needed it, he was one who was contributing that, and that's important to point out.
And Richie, John Cooper, I think, has done an excellent job early on in the playoffs. He's obviously a great coach, took Tampa to the finals last year, but he doesn't just put Jonathan Drouin in the lineup on the fourth line or even the third line. He puts them out there with Valtteri Filppula on the second line, puts Drouin out on the power play. He was playing even a little bit of penalty kill. He showed a lot of trust in him.
That's fair, but you look at the lineup, Izzy. I mean,
there's not that many options.
Yeah.
You look at their bottom six.
That's a credit to him, I agree. You're not penalizing him, but I mean, it's not like there's a bunch of guys ahead of him where you say, oh, you know, guys deserve to play skill-wise.
Well, that bottom six of the Lightning, and this is probably, I think it might really rear its head later on in the playoffs.
Well, Namestnikov's a good player. Cedric Paquette is a gritty player. Brian Boyle, no problem with him as a fourth-line center. It's not the worst bottom six in the NHL.
Fair enough, but I mean, will it rear its ugly head, Drew, against one of the next two teams?
Well, maybe not one of the next two teams. And then the question is, do they have Stamkos back in the lineup if they are able to get to the Eastern Conference Finals? And then if that's the case, then all bets are off at that point in time. It changes the dynamic so quickly.
By the way, I should have stuck, before the season started, I picked the Lightning to win the Cup.
Go with your gut.
Well, after last year, I said I wasn't going to change. So my preseason prediction is I haven't touched it this year.
Without Stroman and Stamkos, Richie, I mean,
I changed last year. I had the Hawks win the Cup in the beginning, and I changed, and I will not change again.
Let me ask you this. Did Jeff Blashill, the Red Wings head coach, did he err in going with Howard over Mrazek or not making that goalie change?
You know
quicker?
What? No, I'm going to say no because Howard.
I say yes. I think he should have.
Down the stretch, Richie, Howard was very good.
Yeah. Mrazek, I thought, was, you know, I mean, you could nitpick now in hindsight, it's 20-20, but
I mean, you look at the numbers, just, you know, Howard in his two games, sub 900 save percentage, 3.59 goals against
average.
They
didn't play well defensively in front of him, in his defense, though.
Yeah, but did they play that much better in front of Mrazek defensively?
No.
I mean, Mrazek had a 945 save percentage in his three games.
Maybe a game too late?
Yeah.
Maybe. Would it have mattered, I guess, is the question?
Also, there's a fair point that it probably wouldn't have mattered.
I mean, Detroit really should have won game five there. Probably should have been, but would they have come back, and should they have won some of the other games? I mean, you can argue, again, in a series where, and remember, it was 2-2 in the 5-2 game. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a deceiving score.
Right.
The 1-0, the goal at the end of the of game five. I mean, that series wasn't as if, you know, it was a five-game series, but it wasn't as if Tampa dominated every single period.
That's what I'm saying. It was that it was quite misleading.
So, yeah.
Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Sharks and the Kings. Mm. The Los Angeles Kings, a lot of people, Stanley Cup finalist, Stanley Cup winner.
Not me.
They're gone in five games as well. We praise the Sharks when we return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Nieto makes a defensive play on the way back to steal from Versteeg, and the Sharks head man to Pavelski. Room down the right, fakes the shot, shoots, he scores! Joe Pavelski puts the Sharks in front 5-3 with 7:36 to go.
That call I like better.
You like that call better? Okay, there you go. That call, the Pavelski goal, makes it 5-3 last night for the San Jose Sharks. Turns out to be an insurance marker as the Sharks win their first round series against the Los Angeles Kings by a 4-1 margin. A lot of people enjoyed that first round series, and I would say a lot of people were surprised at how relatively easily the San Jose Sharks were able to dispatch the Los Angeles Kings in the first round of the playoffs. You know, does this eliminate some of the Sharks' playoff goblins? You know, taking care of really a favorite for the Stanley Cup Finals just as easily and as handily as they did? They were the better team, I would argue, in probably all five games.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that, Drew. You could definitely argue that. And does it conquer demons? To an extent. If they lose next round, then it really doesn't.
Sure.
Then it's same old Sharks.
Right.
If they obviously continue to go forward here. And to me, I mean, with the group that they have, I mean, you need to get really to get to the final. Because how many more chances you can get here with Thornton, Marlowe, and that crew to make that kind of run? But it helps in their confidence. Joe Pavelski was absolutely tremendous.
Mm-hmm. He's been all year.
He's been great. He's always been their clutch guy. He's the guy to rely on. He is the leader of the team. Brent Burns is kind of taking that secondary leadership role on the back end. But they've pushed the other guys to a little more of support roles. Now, offensively, I mean, Thornton's really good.
Yeah.
I've been critical of Joe Thornton before. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but critical of his playoff success. He played really well. Martin Jones, able to stand in there. I had the Kings to win, so certainly surprised. I thought the Sharks had a chance for sure, but I'm surprised at the way this one went. Jonathan Quick left much to be desired and in between the pipes. Mm-hmm. But if you're picking one thing, if you ask me, Drew, give me one reason why the Sharks beat the Kings in a fashion that, you know, wasn't easy, but because it's the Kings, but it may be easier than I thought.
Nobody would have said the Sharks going to beat them in five games.
And I would have, and I know they were the best, a great road team, but win all three games in L.A., mm-hmm. I would point to the fact that Jamie McBain was on the ice last night with 2 minutes left in the game, and the Kings needed not one but two goals.
Okay.
And by that, I guess I mean Alec Martinez's injury in game one might have been the reason they lost, period. And I'm not saying with Martinez they would have won, but the Kings did not have the defensive depth. So if you look at the Kings' defense yesterday, McNabb and McBain, you're relying on Scuderi. I mean, you're relying on a lot of guys who really shouldn't be in your top six, maybe on your bottom pairing. But you're having to rely too heavily on Drew Doughty, who blew the coverage on the fourth goal. I think probably fatigue does play a factor there.
Sure.
Jake Muzzin, who's a real good defenseman. But after that, they didn't really have much. So what you had kind of, when we didn't talk about as much as we did Chicago, Ezzy, you had Doughty, you had Muzzin and Martinez. That was kind of your three core, like Keith, Chalmerson, and Seabrook.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is, like you saw with Keith in game one, I know St. Louis won game one, 1-0, but you saw there with basically two guys to rely on. That's what the Kings had. And they couldn't, Quick had to step up to a different level to cover that up. And he wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, Jonathan Quick was not good in Game 5. And the reason why I took the Sharks, and I didn't take the Sharks in 5 games, I took the Sharks in 7 games. I thought this would go the distance.
Yeah. I thought you took a Sharks sweep, no?
No. I thought, you know, when you look at the Sharks team, there were only 3 teams in the NHL that had more goals than the Sharks this year. It was Pittsburgh, no surprise, Washington, and Dallas. And you know, you talk about Joe Pavelski, who is their MVP. You know, he had a great series, as did Joe Thornton. You know, Patrick mm-hmm. Marleau, you know, veteran now playing on the third line. I thought he was really good, scored a goal in the series, added 3 assists. Joel Ward, even though he didn't score, he's added such a nice veteran presence to this team. But I thought it wasn't a coincidence that Brent Burns was in on Donskoy's winning goal. I think Brent Burns outplayed Drew Doughty in the series, and Brent Burns had a Norris caliber season. I mean, Drew Doughty is going to win the Norris Trophy this year, but Brent Burns is probably going to be third behind Erik Karlsson, I would imagine. You know, Chris Letang might be in there, mm-hmm. some other defensemen, but Burns had a career year this year, and to me, he was such a factor. You know, 8 points in the series, excellent. Martin Jones outplayed Jonathan Quick. He wasn't spectacular. He didn't steal any games. Special teams were also a big factor. Sharks scored 3 power play goals in game 4. The Kings were taking a lot of penalties. I think they got off the game. And I said this too, Richie.
That's a big thing, is the penalties and power play. Yeah,
I thought that the San Jose Sharks were motivated because the core group of this team was still there in 2014. There's some players that weren't there in 2014. Guys like Hurdle was not there. Obviously, a guy like Jonas Donskoy was not there. There are new players. But the core of the team, Thornton, Marleau, Burns, Pavelski, Couture, these types of guys, Vlasic, all of these guys, I think, had that stench of that losing that 3 games mm-hmm. to none lead in 2014, and this was a very motivated group. I think you got to give a lot of credit to Pete DeBoer.
That's the thing I was going to say. We've said good things about Pete DeBoer on the show, maybe, sure. and to me, I think I underrated his effect in the series. He's always been very good at getting teams, not to, you know, buy in what that concept means, but teams to play a system and execute it very well. Like, what he wants them to do, his teams do. He did it in Jersey with not as much talent, and he's done it here in San Jose. Sorry, Ezzy, you were saying?
No, I think it's a good point. And also, the Sharks' defense, they missed the playoffs last year. And I know you were the only one of the 3 of us that picked the Sharks to make the playoffs this year, Drew.
Thank you.
I got to give you credit for that. Mm-hmm. But watching the Sharks' team down the stretch, and L.A. and Anaheim were obviously fighting for the division lead, but the Sharks were there all year. And, you know, picking
well,
up...
Well, but Ezzy, they had that great road record, but in the middle of the season, I mean, didn't start off particularly well, and they made a run later on in the year when they got confident, but, I mean, I watched them play on numerous occasions, I mean, saw the talent, but they weren't overly impressive at oftentimes during the year.
I think that to some extent, that might have been a function of they were in such a bad division that they were they were comfortable where they were so relatively early on that they knew they were probably going to be a playoff team, that they didn't have, like, you know, I agree with you, they weren't great in the middle of the season. But by then...
Well, no, they picked it up.
Yeah, they picked it up as the season.
And they got into that third, second, first spot, you know, right. Later on, were competing for it later on, and they were comfortable. But early on, I mean, they weren't...
But there was no. They were always better than Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton.
That's fair. But I'm saying, like, on you watch them, they weren't world beaters.
No, but I mean, I think that they knew that they didn't have to be world beaters in the regular season. Once they knew that they were going to be a playoff team, they could, you know, keep their powder dry and wait till the playoffs.
And now they're healthy, and they're going to be waiting for the winner of the Anaheim-Nashville series, which is tied two games apiece now. That's been a fantastic series as well. I think it's going to benefit a team like the Sharks. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say, well, if you sit around for a week, you know, and then the other team comes in fresh, I don't really buy into
that. They've got some key veterans who could use that rest.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they're not a young team by any stretch, but so they get some nice time off. I mean, Martin Jones in his first playoff action, badly. I mean, Martin Jones wasn't fantastic, but he was good. Jonathan Quick's numbers are atrocious. 886 save percentage and a 3.04 goals against.
He wasn't good, Drew, and I felt bad for him. On Joe Pavelski's goal, I mean,
that's an awful goal.
It was between the legs. Yeah, I felt really bad for him because Jonathan Quick is one of the best goalies in the NHL.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's probably the best American goalie in the NHL.
Well, Ben Bishop's giving a run right now.
Well, he had a tough series. But I want to say, too, you got to give credit, I think, to Doug Wilson and the management for keeping this team together after everybody thought guys like Thornton and Marlowe were going to be traded in the offseason. He kept this group together.
Well, I mean, Marlowe wanted to be traded, apparently.
Yeah, he asked to be traded in the middle of the regular season.
That's what I'm saying. And he's kept this group together, and this team might go deep into the playoffs now. Now they've got past L.A. I mean, you got Anaheim or Nashville coming up. I mean, those two teams, I wouldn't say, are the strongest teams in the Western Conference. No offense to those teams. I think Chicago and St. Louis are better teams than those two teams. So you look at the Sharks right now, and they're a pretty dangerous team. I wouldn't want to play them right now.
A few minutes before we have to head out for break, what of the LA Kings going forward now? Is this just an aberration, or, you know?
Well, hold on a second. I mean, let's talk about, I mean, Lucic may be out the door.
I can't see how they can target him as a guy. Given their needs on the back end, it seems hard to believe that they can target Lucic as a priority.
We can leave that for later on, but when you have Kopitar, Quick, and Doughty, I mean...
Richie, I really like Milan Lucic. I think the style of play that they play, he's perfect, but can you fit him in under the salary cap?
It's a big question.
I don't think they can fit him in under the salary cap, but if I'm Dean Lombardi, I'd love to keep a guy like Lucic. He was great in the regular season, maybe not as much in the playoffs, but they've had salary cap problems in the past, and I don't know if they have the room.
They have $6 million or so of cap space, and they have to fill one forward, one D, and a goalie. They got 19 guys under contract, NHL contracts for next year.
But you can't look at it in a vacuum.
I know you
can't.
Like
you look at their... Like if you look at their roster on a go-forward basis, it's the guys that you have to sign and how much money that's going to cost the younger guys, right?
Of course.
So, and you look at it, you say, okay, Lucic is a UFA, Versteeg, who actually played all right.
Toffoli's an RFA.
Trevor Lewis, but that's just it, right?
After next season, he's
an RFA. Okay, sorry.
That's what I mean. So after next season, he's an RFA, so is Tanner Pearson. So if you lock up all the money in Lucic, then you've got Kopitar at 10, Brown at 5, you know, we can talk about this later. And does LeCavalier retire?
Right.
So I mean, there are questions that need to be answered here. But you look at their back end, and we talked about the Martinez thing. But with Martinez, Muzz, and Doughty being 28, 27, 26, all under 30, and signed for a combined $15 million, I don't think this team is suddenly going to fall off of a cliff by any means.
So you think that this is just more of a case of bad injury to Alec Martinez, a San Jose Sharks team that's supremely motivated to...
Well, the only contract you really don't like on the books right now, Drew, is...
Dustin Brown's.
Well, I mean, maybe Dustin Brown's, maybe you take issue with the Gaborik one, depending on what you think he has left. So there's maybe two, but it's not like they have... there's other teams that have a little bit more in terms of contracts you don't want for longer periods.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by George Richards of the Miami Herald. We'll talk about the Panthers and the Islanders series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number 3 coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The opening segment is brought to you by our Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com. Follow them on Twitter at Bell Acres.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program George Richards. George covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. He joins us shortly before he's got to jump a plane to Brooklyn for Game 6 between the Islanders and the Panthers. George, appreciate your time this morning, this afternoon there in South Florida. Thanks for joining us.
day.
That's impressive. George can jump a plane.
Oh, wow, George.
Hey, I got hops, baby.
You got hops. There you go. George, obviously a fantastic double overtime game last night. Not the result the Panthers were looking for, as Allen Quine scores in the second overtime to give the Panthers the victory. You know, your thoughts on the series so far? Through five games, it's been very even. The Islanders winning two of their three games in the overtime period. You know, is there anything in particular that really you can point to as the difference between these two teams through five games?
Yeah, Thomas Greiss. I mean, Panthers have dominated this series, completely dominated it. 5-on-5, they've been unbelievable. They've given up some power play goals. Last night's game winner was on a power play and double overtime. I think that's been the difference. The Panthers, penalty kill hasn't been terrific. It's been okay, hasn't been great. And Thomas Greiss has been unbelievable. I mean, the guy is come up as a backup and is carrying this team right now, because right now this series probably should be over. I mean, the Panthers have outplayed them in every single game, with maybe the exception of game one where they had a bunch of defensive lapses. The Panthers should already be over with this series, yet they trailed 3-2 going back to Brooklyn.
George, Roberto Luongo has had a rough series, and on that goal by Allen Quine last night, it looked like he just wasn't over there quick enough. And you know, the rumor has been that Roberto Luongo has been struggling with some type of injury. Do you think, from your opinion, and you've followed the Panthers for many years now, do you think he's really fighting and dealing with that with a more serious injury than maybe he's willing to let on?
I don't know. I mean, I see him every day. I haven't noticed anything. I mean, he's going through his usual routine. It's not like he's taking extra days off or anything. I would think if somebody was injured, you would, maybe take a couple maintenance days, but he hasn't. He's followed the same routine basically all year. He gave up two goals last night. I mean, one was on a power play. He was screened a little bit. Yeah, he was a little bit out of position. But, you don't expect that shot to come through. But it seems like in double overtime, those are the kind of game winners you get from, 30 feet out from a guy who was in the AHL last month. You know, those are the kind of guys who score in double overtime of a playoff game. So, I don't know. I think Lou did about all he could do last night. The Panthers just couldn't score. They had multiple opportunities. They carried the play. They dominated stuff. Once it went to overtime, things started to even out, as they do when fatigue starts to set in. The Panthers should have ended that way before it went to overtime, and Lou would have ended up, with giving up one goal instead of two.
George, what's the status of Nick Bjugstad, and if he can't go, who comes in?
Well, that's a mystery. I don't see him playing tomorrow. We just talked to Gerard Gallant about 20 minutes ago. He said he's still being evaluated. He wouldn't tell us if he was traveling or not. So that tells me he's probably not. Not traveling to New York. Who replaces them? I don't know. They may go back to just rotating three centers like they did in game four, when they, did a real good job there with three guys. Of course, one of those three guys was Nick Bjugstad. So now you've got Vincent Trocheck in the mix. He hadn't played in a month. He looked really good yesterday, looked really good in the overtime. Looked like a difference maker. He didn't score, but he was doing everything else. And, it's good timing. I mean, if you're going to lose a guy like Nick Bjugstad, at least you have Vincent Trocheck to come right back in.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is George Richards of the Miami Herald, discussing the Islanders and Panthers series. Game 6 goes tomorrow evening back in Brooklyn. George, Riley Smith leading all scorers in the NHL playoffs with 8 points, 4 goals, 4 assists. Obviously a great start to the playoffs for Riley Smith. Obviously a talented player acquired from Boston in the offseason. Did you think that he had this kind of performance in him to start the playoffs at the start of the playoffs?
At the start of the playoffs, yeah. At the start of the season, no. And I don't think the Panthers did either. And the Bruins sure as heck didn't, or they wouldn't have traded him. I think going into the playoffs, he kind of struggled. When Vincent Trocheck got hurt, that line with UC Jokinen and Riley Smith seemed to have a little bit of trouble getting their legs. But in that final game against Carolina, even though it was Carolina, a team playing for nothing, that was good for them. They really got their groove back. Riley Smith scores with 5 seconds left to get his career high, get his 25th goal. And then he just blew up in the first three games of the series. Now he hasn't scored in the past two games for the Panthers, but you know he had three real good chances last night, including a couple in overtime that Grice just made some terrific saves on. So he's having a terrific series. They'd like to see him get on the score sheet again. Hopefully the Panthers are hoping he doesn't end the playoffs with 8 points. They definitely could use him to get some more.
George, Mike Matheson has been very impressive. He's a rookie rookie defenseman, only played three regular season games, and he's been playing on the top pair with Aaron Ekblad. He's the veteran, the elder statesman of that pairing. How would you rate his play thus far in the playoff series?
Even though Matheson's older, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, Matheson, wow. I think he played in two regular season games, maybe three. This was his first pro year playing at the AHL Portland after 3 years at Boston College where he was the captain there. He's been looked at as the Panthers' top prospect over the last couple years, mainly because guys like Ekblad and Barkov were already in the NHL. They throw him in game two. They weren't happy with the defensive lapses in game one where they ended up losing 5-4. They throw Matheson in there. He had a couple rough spots maybe early on, but looked okay. But as of the last couple games, he's been really, really good. I think pairing him with Aaron Ekblad, maybe the Panthers' defensive pairing, top defensive pairing of the future, has been great. Those two are playing very well together. Mike Matheson, we talk about Riley Smith with 8 points, but the biggest surprise of the Panthers' postseason may be the play of Michael Matheson, just because we didn't think we were going to see him. He jumps in, and he looks like an NHL guy. You wouldn't know that this is his first pro year, that he didn't play hardly any NHL time this year. He's been great, and I think he's earned a spot, and he's going to be here for a long, long time.
George, you talk about the 5-on-5 play of the Panthers and the Islanders succeeding a bit on special teams here. How do the Panthers, I know they've struggled all year on special teams, but how do they fix that?
You know what? We were talking about this in December. We were talking about it in February. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been fixed yet. So I really have no ideas. And I guess they don't either. The coaches with the Panthers, they're a lot smarter than I am when it comes to those kind of things, and they haven't figured it out. So you just have to live with it. You're going to have to, this is how it is. This is what it is. And, you just got to try and stay out of the box. Now, last night, the Islanders had 5 power plays and only scored on one of them. Obviously it was a big one. It was the one in double overtime. So that was a killer, but, last night it wasn't too bad. They had to kill off 2 penalties in double overtime. You don't see that a whole lot. They only killed off one. They're just going to have to live with what they've got. I don't know. They've tried adjusting guys. They've tried switching things out. They work on it all the time and nothing's worked. So it is what it is.
George Richards is our guest. He covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. We're discussing the Panthers-Islanders first-round series. George, you look at the Islanders' line of Matt Martin, Casey Cizikas, and Cal Clutterbuck. Is there physicality? Do you think it's affecting the Florida Panthers when they're on the ice?
No. I thought maybe it would at the beginning. I think game one we saw so much hitting, which we didn't see in the previous games against the New York Islanders. I think that kind of woke the Panthers up that, hey, this is how it's going to be played. This is going to be the playoffs. But I think they've been okay. I think just the biggest thing is getting pucks past Grice. You would think the physical play, would keep the puck out of the New York zone, but that has not been the case. The Panthers have been in the New York zone at least, 60-65% of the game. In most of the time. You look at that second period last night, and they were outchancing them 10-1. It was, the physicality, they were hitting guys, but the Panthers were still holding on to the puck. So I don't think the physicality is bothering them too much. Maybe Jágr a little bit. He's not used to getting hit the way he's been getting hit. Guys kind of lay off him, in the regular season. He's the elder statesman of the league. But, the New York Islanders are not treating him with much respect. And, he looks banged up for sure.
George, you mentioned Vincent Trocheck earlier. He missed the first three games of the series. Pardon me, the first four games of the series, and he came back for game five, and he's going to be centering the third line with Yuri Hudler and Teddy Purcell. Would you say that that line is going to be one of the keys in game six for the Florida Panthers with, you know, obviously Huberto, Barkov, and Yager? That line been driving the bus, and Riley Smith has been fantastic there on the second line.
Well, now Bukestad out. I think Trocheck goes back goes back with Smith and Jokinen, and he'll center the second line.
Okay.
I think they'll mix and match with the third like they did in game four before Trocheck came back. So, yeah, I mean, that's a line that you know, Yuri Hudler and Teddy Purcell were brought in here at the trade deadline for this time of year, for the playoffs. And I thought they were good last night, at least Teddy Purcell was. Yuri Hudler was as well. I mean, they both had great chances at the end of the first overtime. They both had chances to score with about a minute and a half left. And Grice, again, all over the place making the save. But, you know, they've been okay. But, you know, they need to get going. And that's one of the reasons why Gerard Gallant was switching up centers, just trying to put different people with them. You may see a lot of UC Jokinen centering that line. You know, playing wing on the one line and then centering that one. That's what he did in game four. I wouldn't be surprised to see him do it in game six.
George, final question. We were talking about it earlier in the show. What do you think of the penalty shot call in overtime?
Well, you had to do something. I mean, it was an obvious call. I mean, he catches the puck and just throws it backwards. I mean, that, you know, it's rare. I mean, we haven't seen one, I believe, since 1998. There's been three, apparently, according to NHL media stats, three penalty shots in overtime during a playoff game. Nobody has scored on them. And the strange thing is, Yermer Yager was in all three of those games.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable. That's just nuts.
Crazy.
Every time there's some kind of nutty stat, Yermer Yager seems to pop up in it.
You mentioned Yager, George, and we'll let you go on this one. You know, it's been so many games since he scored in the playoffs. For a guy as prolific as Jaromir Jagr, is that just one of the more bizarre random stats that's currently, you know, out there in the NHL?
When we first heard it, nobody believed it. Nobody believed it. I mean, it's such a large number. It's not like, you know, it's been 11 games, it's been 12 games. Okay, you can kind of see that.
Sure.
You know, we're in the mid-30s. He's almost hitting his age now with games he hasn't scored at in the playoffs. It's wild. And you know what? If people were asking me, you know, if Jager was out there on the ice and you didn't notice him, that would mean, you know, something's going on. But he's been active in the play, around the net, always in the play. He's been playing well, just hasn't been able to put the puck in the net, and I know it's probably frustrating to him. I mean, he denies it, and he jokes about it, but it's got to bother him. I mean, he's a guy who's used to scoring. We're now five games into the playoffs. He hasn't scored a goal. I don't think he's gone five games all season without a goal. So, you know, it's obviously something that's on his mind. You know, does he adjust his game at all? I don't know. He's 44 years old. He does what he wants, but I'm sure it's got to be weighing on his mind at this point.
Well, Panthers fans hope he gets off the schneid in time to see the series return to Florida for a potential Game 7. Game 6 goes tomorrow night in Brooklyn. George Richards covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. George, appreciate your time this morning. We know you got a busy day ahead of you. We'll let you catch a plane and get over to New York in time. Thanks for doing this.
All right, fellas. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers,
George. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to look at the Penguins-Rangers series. You're live on TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday.
Brian Dumoulin out here on board with Ben Lovejoy, and Ben Lovejoy takes the pass, skates to the right wing, coming to the Rangers in, a long shot, save made, rebound, score! The Penguins have scored on the rebound. Fair, I think, will get the goal, and the Penguins strike first and take a 1-0 lead. That was finders, keepers, losers, weepers there.
What do you think about that call, Rich?
Well, you got to love Mike Lang, Drew. Come on. He's a legend.
Shout out to producer Chris Curry for finding that clip of Mike Lang and basically for just putting up with us.
Yeah,
I don't know how you put up with us, Chris. Yeah.
That was the first of five goals for the Penguins on Thursday night.
Well, especially Drew.
Thank you.
Obviously, Drew.
I'm quite distasteful. First of five goals for the Penguins on Thursday night as they absolutely dominate the New York Rangers, winning game four.
Connor Sheary, baby.
To nothing.
Connor Sheary.
This segment of the show brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
Drew, George Richards just mentioned this in the interview, and by the way, it was a great interview, and we appreciate him coming on there, but it seems like every year in the playoffs, there's going to be an Alan Quine. There's going to be a Connor Sheary. Connor Sheary, undrafted, played the last 3 years in the
AHL.
John
Drews, if you want to go way back.
It happens every year. And, you know, for all of the analysis on all the top lines, you know, we talk a lot about the Huberto Barkov Yager line and, you know, the top lines and all that. But it seems like every year there are these unsung heroes that you don't expect are going to score huge goals. Tom Kunuckel is another guy for Pittsburgh. And those types of you know, efforts that they're getting from these third and fourth line guys. Well, actually, Connor Sheary's been on the top line with Sidney Crosby, so he's not a third line guy anymore, but he's usually, you know, a bottom six guy. And, you know, those types of, you know, efforts, and you get the secondary scoring, that goes a long way in these types of series.
Well, the Penguins have that 3-1 stranglehold over the Rangers. Are you surprised by the manner in which the Penguins have been able to really impose their will offensively on the Rangers? I mean, we know the Ryan McDonagh injury is significant. It's a huge loss for the Rangers. Are you surprised that the impact has been this significant through four games of this series? I mean, a 5-0 victory for the Penguins in New York on the ice in Madison Square Garden, Henrik Lundqvist being pulled, you don't see that. You don't expect to see that in the regular season, never mind the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising that Henrik Lundqvist gets pulled. Is it surprising that the Rangers are losing? Maybe, yeah, you know, Drew, to your point, the fashion in which they're losing is probably a bit of a surprise. That they're losing, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
This Rangers team doesn't, you know, Kevin Hayes gets a healthy scratch last game, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, you're having, you know, he's a guy who underachieved all year. You don't have McDonagh, your back end is lacking. Eric
McDonough's
Stahl.
McDonough's been back the last two games, guys.
Right. No, I'm talking at the beginning of the series, though, as he. And you look at it that way, and I think what surprises me when watching this series is, I'm not going to say surprises me, because I had Pittsburgh to win. Pittsburgh played so much better down the stretch, and the Rangers have kind of been all over the place. But it just surprises me that the Rangers have so little confidence in their ability to create offense. And you watch them, my point there is there's very little identity to the New York Rangers. And what we talked a little bit about on the preview show, if I recall correctly, about kind of their offense, and there's parts, but they don't have, obviously, a Crosby. And let's be honest, guys, also, Malkin was not expected to be back this soon. So you get Evgeny Malkin back, one of the top 5-10 players in the world. Some had heard he'd be back in the second round. He's been back, and not only has he been back, but once he kind of got himself,
his legs under him
after a game, he's been pretty darn good.
4 points in game.
Yeah,
four points in that game.
And that's
four
another
victory.
Factor too, right? So I'm not overly surprised that the Penguins are up 3-1. I guess I'm just surprised that they absolutely dominated the Rangers in game four like that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich, and I think we both picked Pittsburgh to win this series. Yeah. And what's unbelievable is they're doing it without Marc-Andre Fleury. Matt Murray comes in and gets
another
a shutout.
Thing, yeah.
He's the, you know, the heir apparent there in Pittsburgh. You know, and no offense to Jeff Zachoff, who was excellent in game one, but Matt Murray, when he was healthy, they decided to go with him and they made the right decision there. But I think Rich, you know, touches on something there. You know, you're talking about a Rangers team who all year were inconsistent offensively. And, you know, the staple of this team has always been, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, top goalie, and they've been excellent defensively. But this team is just not the same team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago against the LA Kings. They're just not as good defensively. And a guy like Rafael Diaz might go in. Brady Shea, rookie defenseman. Good young defenseman, but I think, you know, he's being thrust into the spotlight here in New York. You know, he's being tasked with shutting down top players on Pittsburgh. And, you know, Pittsburgh, you mentioned Malkin coming back,
mm-hmm.
Bonino, Hagelin, and Kessel. That's been a good line for the Pittsburgh Penguins this year. They haven't even been
that dominant this year.
Yeah. They've been okay, but the Crosby line has been so good. Crosby, Hornquist, and now Connor Sheary on that top line, and then Malkin coming in and getting 4 points. So this Rangers team right now, they're not getting the goaltending. The defense looks a little bit shaky. You mentioned McDonough missed the first three games of the series. He's been back now for the last two games, but
he's healthy.
Well, he hasn't been the same Ryan McDonough that you're used to. And another, you know, point to make here is, where has Eric Staal been in this series? I mean, they brought in Eric Staal for this exact reason, to be that secondary scoring on the third line.
Right, but we talked in the trade deadline. He has, the name carries more value than the production on the ice.
Still a good hockey player, though.
Yeah, Rich. Of course. You thought he might be revitalized a little bit and playing with more talent in the playoff race, sure. But how much of a, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure we talked about how much of a boost does that give you?
Well, a little bit maybe, but
not to an extent that's going to make you a 100-point player again.
But the defense they're playing against isn't what you would describe even as it's not a top NHL defense by any stretch.
No, it's not.
So the fact that they haven't been able to get anything going, relatively speaking, offensively.
I mean, go ahead, Ezzy.
The Rangers have had one good offensive game in the series, and it was game two.
Yeah.
And that was the game that Derek Brassard had 4 points. It was 3 or 4 points.
But we didn't talk about Mata's been back, and that's a huge... addition to the Penguins' back end that we were questioning. But now,
Mata and Letang, but I mean, after that, I mean, you know, Dumoulin, Daly, Cole, Lovejoy, these guys aren't world-beating defensemen.
You're right, but again, we talked about the Rangers' offense. I mean, how many guys are scary on that forward group to take advantage of that? Now, Washington throwing out Kuznetsov against the second pairing there gives you more concern.
Sure. Well, and that's would be what we expect to happen. And I mean, it'll be a fantastic second round series between the Capitals and the Penguins, which is what we expect will happen, as both those teams, you know, the Capitals obviously had a 3-0 lead. The Rangers or the Penguins have a 3-1 lead.
Right. And you got to give a lot of credit to Matt Murray. I mean, he played excellent in game five. But, you know, to Richie's point here, you know, Rick Nash scored a beautiful shorthanded goal. He's only got one goal. Brassard's got one goal. They've only scored 7 goals in the entire series, Drew. That's not going to cut it.
No, it's not going to cut it, especially when 4 of those goals, come in one game. So game five, of course, goes tonight between the Rangers and the Penguins. What do the Rangers need to do to be able to turn this around? They're back into Pittsburgh. Do you expect that they're going to go wimply into the night, weakly into the night, meekly into the night? Or do you think that they have another gear left in them that can send this series back to New York?
I mean, if Henrik Lundqvist has to be 100 times better than he was last game, and if he's not, I think they're done.
Yeah, and Henrik Lundqvist, Richie, traditionally has responded well to poor games.
I mean, he's a great competitor, and he was calling out his team last game. If you saw, and if you read into him, he was mad at himself. He didn't play well. Let's be clear there.
Sure.
But he was certainly not happy with the play in front of him.
And I think, too, I don't think we've seen Sidney Crosby play like this in the playoffs since they won the Cup in 2009. And with Evgeny Malkin back now healthy, they got to shut down those two guys first and foremost. I mean, if they don't do that, then the way they're scoring, they have no chance.
NHL needs that second round matchup. I mean, Philly and New York has to lose for the NHL
to get that Crosby Ovechkin.
Yes, of course. Who doesn't want to watch that?
It'll be fantastic hockey.
And that needs to happen. That needs to happen.
Well,
that's what I'm hoping for as a fan of the game. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't really care if the Rangers make it or if the Flyers make it. I know they're both teams with great history. I appreciate that. But, I mean, we need to see Crosby, Ovechkin.
Yeah. You're talking about the two top offensive teams in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be great hockey.
That's exactly. But the skill level and the rivalry and the storylines, I mean, that's what the NHL needs.
The Penguins,
they also could use some Canadian teams in the playoffs.
I think that ship is
not these
already.
Canadian teams.
Yeah, not these Canadian teams. Not the Penguins can take care of business on that front if they win Game 5 tonight, and then coming, the Capitals have their opportunity to advance tomorrow as well. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Battle of the Badges. Sean Chornley joins us alongside, I believe, former Winnipeg Jets player Dave Ellett is going to join us as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday here on this fine radio station. Coming up later on this evening, you'll have Game 6 between the Blues and the Blackhawks. And then tomorrow morning, the Capitals and the Flyers will do battle of Game 6 as well. Puck drop. 11 a.m. tomorrow for that game, and then 7 o'clock tonight for that game.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Constable Sean Chornley, who is the organizer of the Battle of the Badges, which is coming up next week. Starts Thursday, April the 28th with a draft and then continues Friday and Saturday. Sean, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Our pleasure. So, Sean, why don't you tell our audience what is the Battle of the Badges? What's it all about? Where does the money go to support? You know, people are hearing about it for the first time. What is the Battle of the Badges?
Okay, well, basically, the Battle of the Badges is it's a charity hockey tournament that has incorporated a bunch of celebrities who also participate, and that being the majority of them being Jets 1.0 or Jets alumni, who will be drafted into the lineup come Thursday night at the draft party over at the Pint. And we're looking like we're going to have approximately 15 teams participating next weekend, and we're really excited about it. All proceeds from the event, from the tournament and from the draft and from the whole course of the weekend's events are in direct support of the Dream Factory Children's Charity.
Sean, how have you seen this tournament grow since its inauguration?
Well, it's our third year. So 3 years ago when we first started it, I shouldn't say it's our third year. We actually ran a tournament years ago and then it took a hiatus. I would say after my son was born in 2007, so we took a little bit of a break and we came back at it and reviewed what do we need to change things up and make it a little bit better. And what we did is we inserted the lineup of the celebrities. It's grown. I mean, our sponsorship has grown. Our partnership with the Pint has evolved into our second year, which has been absolutely awesome. And the turnaround from that is we've gone from 8 teams and now we're at 15, and I think we'll have 20 next year.
This is the one that Rick Ralph is hosting at the Pint?
That's correct, yep.
Rick Ralph. Where'd you find that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. We had to do a few searches here and there, but we're really happy to have him back.
We're, of course. No, he's great. Rick's great. That's a great choice, Sean. In terms of the charity, can you give us more background on the charity and who benefits from that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Dream Factory is a Manitoba-based charity, and their mandate is to provide wishes to children with life-threatening illness. So we're really excited. We've been involved with that charity for a number of years with our team, the Winnipeg Police Patrolmen. And I guess we dated back our relationship with them when we used to do the Old Timers Hockey Challenge over at the Winnipeg Arena back in the day and the MTS Center. So when the tour ended about 5 years ago, we kind of wanted to keep things going and keep the ball rolling and keep support of the Dream Factory, and another reason why the tournament was created.
Well, Sean, earlier in the interview, you mentioned that there would be a lot of Jets 1.0 alums that are going to be participating in the event. One of those Jets 1.0 alums joins us on the phone now as well. Dave Ellett, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. And hey, Sean, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very good.
Dave, you're going to be coming into Winnipeg for the tournament, obviously. Why is it important to you to come in and participate in one of these events, you know, obviously benefiting a great cause in the Dream Factory?
Well, Sean and I met on the ice a number of years ago and other charity events. And, he had told me about this new event that they had going on. And last year was the first year that I attended. And, it was a lot of fun, number one, and the cause that they're raising the money for, I think, is tremendous. So, it's just one of those win-win situations where I get a chance to get back to Winnipeg, see a bunch of old friends, have some fun playing hockey, and raise as much money as possible for a great charity.
Dave, I know that you were in Winnipeg recently because I said hi to you up in the Jets press box. Have you talked to the Jets organization at all about the alumni game that's coming up in Winnipeg in October?
All I can say is Dale Hawerchuk's the man in charge.
Did you ever think Dale Hawerchuk would be the coach of a team you played on?
Well, I sure hope he's playing because he can still play.
Dave Ellett joined.
There's a lot of excitement about that event.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that event. Dave, obviously a lot of excitement about the Dream Factory, but we got to talk, you know, I assume you've been watching some of the Stanley Cup playoffs. One of the most indelible memories of my youth, as well as Richard and Ezra's youth, is, of course, watching you score in double overtime back in 1990. You know, when you do you watch the playoffs on a regular basis? And, you know, when as a former player, you know, how do you view the playoffs in a different prism, let's say, than the rest of us do, either as fans or media or anything along those lines?
Well, I think with the way and the parity in the league now, just making the playoffs is a pretty good achievement. And then to me, you know, as a fan now, the first round of the NHL playoffs is some of the best entertainment you're going to find in pro sports, as far as I'm concerned. You look at all these series now, you know, especially like that Chicago-St. Louis series, that's some of the best hockey you're going to see anytime, any place. So I think this first round is really exciting. There hasn't been, you know, I think there was maybe one game that was a little bit of a blowout, but every game is very competitive, and, you know, you got to be playing at your best to actually win a series.
Sean, in addition to Dave, who's obviously going to be playing in the celebrity hockey game, for those who are interested in attending the draft party at the Pint, who are some of the other ex-Winnipeg Jets that fans can expect to see there?
Yeah, we also coming in is Morris Lukowich, Dougie Smale, Davey Babich, Al McDonald, Joe Daly, Bill Lasuk, Mike Ford, Russ Romanek, and some other non-Jet players, NHL alumni Jamie Leach and Wayne Babich, and Warren Skorodensky is going to be the old Blackhawks goalie. He's going to come out wearing the old mask that awesome. He was wearing when Dale Hawerchuk scored his 50th on him.
That's awesome. Sean, who's the best former Jet, putting you on the spot here, that you play against in this game?
Best former Jet in this game?
Yeah.
I got him on the phone right now. I'm going to ask the number two.
Good answer, Sean.
Okay, you can have the wide side now.
There you go.
Thanks.
Dave Ellett and Sean Chornley Jonas on the program to talk about the Battle of the Badges. You know, Dave, you know, who are you still in touch with from those old teams, from the Jets 1.0 version? You know, are you still in touch with the guys on a regular basis, or sort of just you know, now and then when you happen to cross paths?
Yeah, you know, majority when that's part of the fun of these events, you get a chance. You know, everyone's living in different parts of the country and have families and jobs, so you don't get a chance to see each other as much. I stay in pretty regular contact with Dale Hawerchuk. He's got a couple of charity events that I do for him, and the other one is Tim Waters. I'm living in Phoenix now, and he's living down here too. We started a Coyotes alumni, so we see each other on a regular basis.
Are you on the golf course more often, or are you on the ice more often now?
Oh, well, believe it or not, I've switched from being a three-time-a-week golfer to a once-a-week hockey player.
Ah, well, there you go. So you're keeping up the skills.
Well, Dave, good. As long as that slap shot is still working out like it was when you scored the double OT winner in 1990, then you're good.
That's the problem these days. It's all no slap shot games.
You could, how fast could you shoot if you had one of those hybrid sticks that they're using nowadays? The composite, the one pieces.
Yeah, they certainly that technology has changed shooters. Now, basically, you know, there was a time with those old wood sticks, there was maybe one or two guys per team that could really bring it. But now with that technology, basically everyone can shoot the puck.
Sean Chornley and Dave Ellett join us here on the program. Sean, we'll let you guys go on this last question. People, you know, we've been talking about the Battle of the Badges. If people want more information, they want to buy tickets, they want autographs, they want, you know, everything, anything to do with the great event that's coming up this weekend, how do they go about doing so?
Yeah, there's a number of venues in the city that are selling tickets for the draft. You can drop in on the Pint over 274 Gary. You can drop in on the Winnipeg Police Credit Union, the Pita Pit over at Regent Lodge Modé and Ellis Avenue. Joe Wood Daily Sports Cards and Framing has them up, and a couple places place downtown, Uptown Sports, and a place over in St. James called Superstar Sports has them. So if
drop in, and we'd definitely encourage and welcome the public support for the events.
The Battle of the Badges, it gets underway with a draft this coming Thursday. Games on the ice Friday and Saturday at the Southdale Community Center. There's also a memorabilia show coming up on Saturday. Constable Sean Chornley, Jets 1.0 legend Dave Ellett, really appreciate you guys joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, we hope to see you on the ice at Investors Group Field coming up in the real alumni game against the Oilers later on in October.
Well, I look forward to this weekend and of course, playing in that alumni game in October.
Thanks very much, guys. Have yourselves a great Saturday. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we still got two series to touch on. The Stars and the Wild, the Ducks, and the Preds. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday. I never meant to cause you any pain.
Can't get it out. Held in Suter here, left point. Suter with a shot, he scores! It was tipped in front to be a game six. Suter's shot from the left point, deflected past Niemi, and Minnesota has won the overtime at 4:55.
Mikko Koivu scoring for the Minnesota Wild to send the Wild and Stars to a game six back in St. Paul. That game will take place tomorrow evening. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. We've been unable to give away. There haven't been any winners in the ICOT pool. Which
there was a winner the other night.
That was like a couple nights ago. But last night, there were two OT games. Nobody predicted nobody predicted Mikko Koivu would win.
Or good Alan Quine.
Good or song Alan Quine.
By Chris.
So what you're going to do now, caller number three to 780-1290. You're going to win four tickets to Rumors this coming Thursday. Can't give them away on Twitter. Going to give them away on air.
The phone lines are literally lighting up, Drew.
780-1290. Win four tickets to Rumors next Thursday to see Carmen Lynch.
I'm calling
Rumors
in right now.
You're not allowed to call in. You're on air, Ezzy. I keep explaining that to you. Anyways, let's talk about the Wild and the Stars. The Wild win Game 5 last night in overtime. They send it back to St. Paul for a Game 6. The Stars' goaltending, has that just really been the biggest factor in this? Just they cannot get a key save when they need to? We spoke about it with Marty Biron not that long ago. A few hours, you know, about 90 minutes ago at this point in time.
Well, Lindy Ruff has turned to Antti Niemi, guys, but, I mean, that was a beautiful tip by Mikko Koivu on the Ryan Suter shot. So I wouldn't blame Antti Niemi on that one. I don't think he had much of a chance. He wasn't good yesterday, that's for sure. I mean, the Dallas Stars should have wrapped up this series by now, Rich. I realize they don't have Tyler Seguin right now, but the Dallas Stars are a better team. But you know, you got to give credit to the veterans of the Minnesota Wild. Jason Pominville has been very good in this series. Mikko Koivu, I mean, he's leading by example right now. He scored a couple of big goals yesterday. So, you know, you got to give him credit here. You know, but the Dallas Stars, I think, are still going to win this series. And they certainly, you know, had every opportunity to do it last night in Dallas. But again, David Dubnyk played very well. I think it's one of those situations here where the Minnesota Wild could have easily just laid down and been swept in the series. But they're fighting back. It's a resilient group. But I still think Dallas's offense is going to be way too much for Minnesota to handle for the rest of the series. It's probably only going to be one more game.
You have to give Minnesota credit because I didn't think they'd hang around this much.
Yeah.
Has Dallas let them hang around? Sure, a little bit in the goaltending. Has been an issue. I mean, let's be honest, guys.
Well, they're going to go back to Lettinen, by the way, for game six.
You think so? He's a more talented of the two netminders. Tyler Seguin coming in and going back out is huge.
Sure.
Now, they should still have won yesterday up 4-3 after they made the comeback there and took the lead. You got to finish that game and finish the series. But Tyler Seguin's huge injury. I mean, is it the Achilles or is it compensation for the Achilles injury? I know you were concerned about that, Drew, coming into the series. I thought he'd come back. We're certainly both not doctors, so you don't know. But that's on a go for. I still think they win the series, although they are letting Minnesota hang around more than they ought to. But go forward, if they are victorious and they don't have Seguin against the next round of St. Louis or Chicago, that spells big trouble.
looking at game six, then, is there anything in particular that you're looking for? Is it just, you know, you think that the, you know, are the Stars fragile as a result of what happened in game five or anything? Or is it just they, you know, they lost their way and you expect them to bounce back in game six? Do they have the confidence?
I don't think we know that yet, Drew. I think that's a fair question. Are they fragile? We don't know yet. I mean, when they lost to Anaheim 2 years ago and they blew that game in game six, yeah, maybe they're fragile. They have a lot of different blood in here, though, and they haven't really been the favorite in the series. So I don't know if we know how their state of mind is collectively, their collective state of mind as a team. But we'll find out a lot more about it.
Can you have confidence in, if you're a forward or you're one of your defensemen, can you have confidence in your goaltending right now?
You probably don't have confidence in your goaltending. You can, but you probably don't at this point. But, and you know, my concern is goaltending, but also it's, can you play better defense? And I don't get me wrong, goaltending, those two things are certainly tied together. But you need to also play better team defense. Their defense, though, we've talked about it, is a very good puck-moving defense. I think it's underrated in terms of, you know, they don't have the big name there, but that's how they play defense. They play defense in the other end of the ice. And without Tyler Seguin, you play less time in the other end, you play more time on your own end. Do you want to be simple about it?
Ezzie, did Lindy Ruff err in going away from Kari Lehtinen after, you know, one bad game and going with Antti Niemi instead?
Kari Lehtinen's goals against in three games is 1.69.
That's my point.
He let in five goals in three games. I'm not really sure why Lindy Ruff decided to pull Kari Lehtinen. Well, I guess you just nailed it. I mean, he had a bad game, and they go with Antti Niemi. I think he did, and you're going to see him go back to Kari Lehtinen. I agree with Rich. I think even though Lehtinen and Niemi split the games this season, Lehtinen is the better goalie, and I expect Dallas to wrap up this series in Minnesota. It might go to seven games. I mean, stranger things have happened, and Minnesota is scoring right now, but you look at how Dallas has played, and really you have to look at goaltending and defense as the major reason why Minnesota's back in the series. They haven't been able to hold on to those leads late in games, the last game especially. And, you know, you got to bear down here and you got to win potentially a game that is lower scoring. Going into Minnesota, you know that they're going to be fired up in front of their home crowd. I mean, but look at Sagan's injury is obviously a huge loss for the Dallas Stars. But
yes.
Jamie Benn's been excellent in the series. Jason Spezza has been excellent in the series. They're getting goals from secondary sources. Guys like Radek Faxa and Alex Hemsky has been very good in the series. I'm not a big fan of Hemsky, but he has been very good in the series. So offense has not been the problem. This team
Never.
Is scoring goals. Mm-hmm. So they got to clamp down and put together a better defensive effort in St. Paul.
Before we look ahead at the last series, that's the Ducks and the Predator series. Congratulations to Grant Clark. He was caller number three.
Attaboy, Grant.
He wins the four tickets to Rumors Comedy Club for this coming Thursday. We'll be in touch with Grant accordingly. The Ducks and the Predators, home ice has meant nothing. The Predators win the first two in Anaheim. The Ducks go back. They win the next two in Nashville. It's a best of three series now. This afternoon they'll be playing back in Anaheim. Did the Ducks sort of need a wake-up call? And they got that in the first two games? Or is this really going, or do you think that the Predators have what it takes to win two of the next three and win the series?
I picked them in the series, although my predictions have been pretty bad in this first round here, so don't go on those.
Yeah.
So I think they're good enough to win. You know, you mentioned, Drew, you mentioned the show plan, at least the Craig Smith
injury.
And that's significant because he's able to provide scoring from the wings and he's got a good shot and he's a, you know, fairly underrated player. That's something they can win. I don't know if the Ducks needed a wake-up call. I think the Ducks took the Predators pretty seriously here, Drew. It was hard not to. But the Ducks, as a team with Stanley Cup aspirations, weren't going to go down lightly, and the pressure swung, right? I mean, while I think the Ducks were taking the Predators seriously, you come down 2-0, you get into that desperation, and you're a Stanley Cup contender. So you change the style of play, and Nashville comes up. They're feeling a little more comfortable. You know, get 1-2 at home. You're up 3-1. You're in pretty good position. But you're dealing with so much talent, and let's be clear here, guys. Frederik Andersen has been great.
Mm-hmm. He has been great, and that's a huge
thing for this Anaheim team. I like Frederik Andersen. I liked him last year, but you know, last year fading against the Chicago Blackhawks, he has certainly proven this whole season and now in the playoffs that he's a real good netminder, and so that's been a key as well.
Yeah, and Nashville scored one goal in the last two games. They got to get going here. They scored early in Anaheim. Game one was by far their best game.
Mm-hmm.
But Richie nailed it. I mean, Freddie Anderson has been excellent. The top pair of Vatanen and Lindholm, who actually haven't been paired up. It's usually been Lindholm and Fowler or Fowler on that top pair. Kevin Bieksa has actually done a really good job there in the top four. You'd expect him to not even be in the lineup at some points in the season, but he's been really good. The defense has done an excellent job frustrating Nashville, but guys like Mike Ribeiro, who hasn't done anything in this series, he's got to step up, especially in the absence of Craig Smith. But Philip Forsberg did nothing in the two games in Nashville. Also, Drew, the power play has been awful. They've scored one goal in the series on the power play. I think they were 0-for-6 in game four, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, they've got to be better on special teams. But it's pretty simple. I mean, that offense has got to get going here.
Well, you look at the top line of Yarncroc, Johansson, and Neal. They've combined for 2 points. I mean, Johansson's got 1 point. This is his first real, you know, significant playoff test.
Yeah, but it... Okay, but is
and,
that...
And so I just want to say one thing, Richie. You got to give the Ducks...
playoffs of Columbus 2 years ago.
You've got to give the Ducks credit. Right. The Ducks, I mean, Freddie Anderson and John Gibson, they won the William Jennings Trophy. This is one of the best defensive teams in the NHL.
Yes.
I think they're an underrated defensive team.
They
there.
Are,
we mentioned
Vatanen,
sure, Lindholm, Fowler, Shea Theodore has done a good job there in his rookie season. You got to give them credit here. But, I mean, come on, Nashville's got a pretty good offense, and they've got to find a way to beat Freddie Anderson.
I find the series to be pretty interesting. There's a lot of dynamics, a lot of storylines, emotional coaches. You talk about the ability to defend, but also a willingness to play offensive hockey. So you can look at the two different ways. That Johansson, they haven't been able to get going here, and that's a huge problem for the Predators. Or they're tied 2-2 against the higher-seeded team, and their top players haven't yet played at the level that they're capable of.
Similar to the Blackhawks and
yes,
the Blues
exactly.
In that sense. If they can get... I mean, yes, Johansson played for the Blue Jackets, yeah. But that was his first sort of full season in the NHL. So this has been his first taste of playoffs in a number of years where he's actually been the man, and that's what the Predators got him in there to be, to be the man in the top-line center role, and he hasn't yet performed in this series.
That's fair. 4 games.
Early. I mean, they can only go up by the sample size we have in front of us.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up the show here, got to give a shout-out to the Brandon Wheat Kings, who won Game 1 of the WHL Eastern Conference Final. Shout-out to Kelly McCrimmon and
John Quenneville with the overtime winner. The Wheat Kings beat the Red Deer Rebels last night, so they're up 1-0 in that series as well, as they look to get to the Memorial Cup this year.
I mean, I haven't seen them play, but I've heard they're a pretty darn good team.
Well, they said, I was reading something, I think they lost to the Rebels in January by it was either a 7-0 score or a 10-0 score. They absolutely got embarrassed, and ever since then, they've been an absolute juggernaut in the Western Hockey League. So you hope that continues with a trip to the Memorial Cup.
You know who
Cup
John Quenneville's drafted by?
Devils.
The Devils, yes, I know. Okay, now hang on. As you still have time, get a Marty Brodeur reference in.
Well, it's going to be kind of tough here. I mean, he's the assistant GM of the St. Louis Blues,
so
he's probably had a bit of an influence on Brian Elliott, you got to
think. Well, I mean, he was brought in when they had 3 goalies, and Brian Elliott thought he might be pushed to the side.
That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. A big thank you to our guests, Sean Chornley and Dave Ellett, George Richards of the Miami Herald, Marty Biron of TSN, and Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris Curry, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Jays baseball and the Blackhawks and the Blues later on today on TSN 1290.